This podcast is part of the Neverland Network, where faith meets video games, movies, and fun. Find more shows like this at neverlandpodcast.com. After switching over to the Famicom, there was a time when Hironobu Sakaguchi wasn't happy with anything he was creating. He thought of retiring from the game industry and created Final Fantasy as his final project. That's why the title includes the word final, but for Sakaguchi, the title Final Fantasy reflects his emotional state at the time and the feeling that time had stopped. They say that technologically, it's good to keep going, and each time we will give it our all and expand our skills and energy until we can go no further. And this is what Hironobu Sakaguchi considers to be the Final Fantasy.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Yes, it is me, and I am back. For those of you who only listen to this show, you missed a couple of weeks worth of watching movies with my pastor, which one of them was actually a playing games with my wife episode. But I released those on a separate channel because I already had them pre-recorded and we needed to get another movie watched and everything. So I just released those, and I didn't really have anything going over here. Usually I can only get out one thing a week. And we actually took a little camping trip. I guess it's been a couple of weekends ago now. Yeah. So it's been a little bit of time, but we went on a little camping trip, and so I was out for a while, took a vacation, had some other things that are currently going on in my life that are needing to be dealt with that are not as good, but at least we had a pretty decent camping trip, camping weekend. We had rented a cabin out at Mark Twain Lake. It was nice. So I've been kind of busy, you know, going and doing different things, so I really haven't been working on the show, but I was getting things prepared to be able to make the return, and I have some fun here. In case you haven't figured out what we're going through today, I have finally, as speaking of what I've been playing, finally completed Final Fantasy VI, and so now I've got a platinum on that one as well. So I have 6 platinums in the first 6 games, and 7, maybe I'll get a platinum on that one. I still have the remastered version, plus the remake and rebirth, but remake and rebirth, there's no way I'm going to get a platinum on those. But I might try to get a platinum on 7. I'm kind of playing around with it. There's a few things I haven't done, but there's a mini game that I'm probably never going to be able to beat, but I'm probably not going to get that platinum. So from here on, I'm just going to try to play, and I currently own up through 10-2, so I do intend to play those, but this week with the October coming in there, usually over on our YouTube channel, the Neverland Official Gaming Channel, or Official Neverland Gaming Channel, something like that. If you look for it, you'll find it. I usually do something every year I call Scare Play, where I'll play some scary games and stuff like that. And I'm slowly putting through my playthrough. It'll be releasing here starting, I guess, tomorrow, because tomorrow, as the time I'm recording this, it is Podcast International Day, or International Podcast Day, September the 30th. And so October 1st, I've got things scheduled to release a large chunk of me playing The Evil Within 2, which I already had played through, but I've recorded it, and I'm trying to get it edited together and released to you. But I'm also going to be playing, because of my PlayStation account, free game that I'm going to get here like October the 5th, Alan Wake 2. So I will be sitting and playing that. I'm going to try to set up some live stream capabilities here. I'm working on setting things up with a capture card so I could stream it directly into the computer and have, because normally what I have to do, I go like an hour at a time and I record it directly. I create videos on the PlayStation, and then I have to put them on a hard drive, bring them over to the computer, then I have to edit. But I'm like, okay, what if I can just stream it directly, you know, with a capture card, or record the video and then share it directly. So I'm working on doing that. I have done some things like that through Twitch. I don't know if Twitch is still connected with PlayStation, but I know that was an option at one point. It was an option that you could go straight to YouTube from your PlayStation, but that hasn't been an option in a good long while now. So that's kind of where I'm at. We will have some scare play going on. And so I finished Final Fantasy VI to open some time up for Alan Wake 2, which even before that releases, I have a little bit of time to just play whatever I want. And I'm not sure what I can do that I can in just a couple of days. I'm probably going to play around with Rebirth again, and maybe I'll see if I can get through a few more levels on hard mode, because I still haven't managed that one. In that, there's something like a Crimson Desert that's about to have a sequel, and I guess it's a free-to-play massive online thing, and I might look into that while I'm going. Either to play some more Final Fantasy 14 as online, and I haven't done that in a while, and I probably lost track of what I was doing. So I got some things I'm going to be playing with until I get a chance at Alan Wake. Probably, I guess it'll be it'll be like Monday before I get a chance to play, because it's usually on the 5th that Sony releases the games into my PlayStation Plus account to where I get my freebies. So that is the current plans and what I've been playing. And I'm going to get a little bit more into what I've been playing as we get into our content, because as I mentioned, playing content, I'm going to talk about the first 7 games, their development, music, and reception, everything for like the original release. And of course, I'll talk about my experience of playing through these first 6 that I've been doing over the past. How many months have I been doing this? But that is the current plan. So hopefully you're going to have some fun with this, because I'm having fun doing some video game stuff. As to what I've been watching, we haven't gotten a chance to watch any more episodes of Firefly, I think. Well, no, I've probably watched some since last time we had an episode here over on the Fandom Nexus. I got to say there was something that happened. Well, there's been a few things that we haven't really enjoyed as much on Firefly. You can definitely tell the atheistic nature of I almost said Josh Brolin, but that's not the right guy. Joss Whedon, though, has really fed into some of the stories and how Christianity is kind of treated and anything resembling it, how it's kind of treated. We haven't really appreciated that. Also, there was something that I don't want to spoil too many things in case you've never watched this. But Kaylee has been our favorite character, and they did some flashbacks and established how Kaylee ended up on the ship. And it really seems to alter her character and what I had thought of her. I didn't really appreciate it. I'm not going to get into it. But yeah, the way she's introduced onto the ship, even though, you know, it seemed really a bit out of character, because sorry to put this delicately as best as I can. But apparently you show her a ship's engine and that's all it takes. We'll just put it like that. It was so bad. I was like, really? Really? But yeah, it kind of demeaned the character, I think, by having how she ended up on the ship was that. I'm not going to go any further into that. That's about as far as I can go safely, I think. But yeah, it irritated me. Still overall, though, enjoying the series for the most part. So I do intend to watch the rest of it. So but it is getting time to we want to watch some fun, spooky movies. So watching movies with my pastor, I've got plans for maybe watching their old 1960s The Haunting or some old Vincent Price movies, you know, the fun stuff for that I actually like watching, you know, that kind of thing. So that is currently plans on for that. And for the, of course, the upcoming show, normally here in the Fandom Nexus, I try to do something fun for October. I have no idea what I'm going to do. So I do have some plans for some upcoming shows, but they're not quite related to the season or anything. So I have not figured that out. All I know is we're just going to keep going and keep having fun together. So I'll just keep it at that. But that's what I've been playing and what I've been watching. And we're going to go from there. Actually, you know what? There's a little bit of a news thing.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Okay, now this is mainly going to be like on topic. Today is the day they've released Final Fantasy Tactics. It's like the Ivernus Chronicles. Basically, they've remastered the old Final Fantasy Tactics game and changed some text around and some dialogue. And I've been seeing people point out today that there's white materia that shows up in it, and they've changed some text when talking about describing white materia as being where you can store knowledge in it. And that's how the Rebirth game has acknowledged the white materia that Aerith carries, is as all this stored knowledge or whatever. It's why she seems to also have some foresight into what's going on. But it mentions that it can also be used for Rebirth, which was not in the original game, but it has been mentioned now. And people have been like, oh, what's that mean? What's that mean? I mean, it definitely seems to connect to the second of the remake trilogy, but it also makes you wonder if the white materia can somehow now be used to bring Aerith back or something else. I don't know. But people have been really speculating on that. Another funny thing that just kind of popped up on social media as I was seeing pictures of it, and this is not coming out until February. I had to do some translating from some Japanese pages from manufacturers or something. People were sending links to me, but they have a statue. It could be another $200 thing of Aerith coming. So, of course, I'm going to get it. And it is, I like to call it the beach wear, not her swimwear, although it's being labeled as a swimwear from Rebirth. But she's got more of a bikini style thing. That's more of a swimwear. The beach wear, it's got more of a full kind of a top. And she's got like a skirt with kind of a jean shorts underneath the skirt thing. And it's on that. And it's got this really neat water effect on the bottom of it. And that's coming in February. So, of course, I'll be saving my pennies to try to get that one. That's the only news really that I wanted to get in today. There's been a lot of bad news in the world. And that's good news, at least for me, and stuff I'm excited about. So I'm sharing it because it fits with the show. OK, that's my favorite video game character ever. So I'm interested in that kind of thing. All right. So then we did have the recent release of the Spider-Man set from Magic the Gathering. I did manage to get myself a bundle. The odd thing is there was not a starter pack, but I did get a bundle that had a lot of boosters. And I did get a card of Spectacular Spider-Man that was a foil card. So I think that's it would be a good valuable type card. Of course, I don't collect them for the value. I collect them because I enjoy them. And I was just excited to have some Spider-Man cards. I thought it was really, really kind of cool that Wizards of the Coast is doing this. But they've been announcing all kinds of different stuff that's coming, like a Star Trek set. I think there was something else I saw that's kind of exciting. Oh, other than also another set of Final Fantasy cards coming out, even like a Chocobo bundle. So yeah, Magic the Gathering, if you used to play it and you're into things, and people said this has become like Fortnite now, where Fortnite is always bringing in licensed stuff, and now all these licensed things are coming into Magic the Gathering. But, you know, it's getting me to buy stuff. They're making money. So, I mean, I'm not really playing Magic the Gathering other than on Arena, because when I buy these nice cards, I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep them nice. I'm going to seal them up and that kind of thing. So that's pretty much what I've got for news. It's fun things that I've been doing that maybe you're participating in. I don't know. If you're playing Magic the Gathering Arena, we should find each other. We should play. I should play a bit more often. That's the only way I play with my cards, because I'm trying to not touch them that much, except for when I want to just look at them, because the artwork is really cool and some of the captions are neat. Like, I got to say, I'm really enjoying the Aunt May card that I got from the Spider-Man set, where she doesn't have any attack power. She's just got defensive power. And what she does when you tap her is she can restore health to one of your creatures. Or whatever whatever your creatures might be. It could be that you have like characters from Spider-Man in there. But the quote it has on her card is like, "Hey, Petey, I've made your favorite breakfast, wheat cakes." And for those of you in the know Spider-Man fans, that should make you smile and laugh a little bit, like, oh, that's awesome. That's perfect. And because it is. And I was really happy to see that on her card. I really enjoyed it. So, and in fact, that actually came up. We went to an apple orchard to buy some apples because it's a fall thing to do. And there was a kid there behind the counter in one of their little shops that I was wearing a Spider-Man shirt, and we ended up discussing Spider-Man and stuff like that, and told him how I go all the way back to Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. That's my first Spider-Man, really, when I was a kid. So, yeah, it was fun. But anyways, let me drop a quick thing in here before we get into our main topic is Debbie. If you go, of course, to NeverlandPodcast.com, that's where you find the home of the Neverland Network of podcasts, where you're going to find this show. The Mighty Marvel Tooncast is coming back. I've got so much plans on it. We just haven't sat down to watch an episode and record an episode yet with my wife. We've been kind of busy with going camping and things like that happening around the house. That is not as good as going camping. We've had some stuff. Can I tell you a weird story real quick? When we went camping, didn't see a single deer, but that Monday after we were headed to work, we got hit by one. We didn't hit the deer. The deer hit us, thankfully, because so it pounded in the driver's side rear door, but not enough to where we couldn't open the door. So, I mean, it's not like a really bad damage, but it's annoying to not see the deer and then have a couple of them run across the road. And there was the one that crossed in front of us and then one that just ran right smack into us. So we got hit by a deer. So that's one of the crazy things happening around here. But Debbie, if you go to the website, you'll find a large logo for Dubby, where you go to Dubby.gg and use the discount code Neverland. You do this if you happen to be a gamer. Heck, we're talking about video games even today, and you need some energy, but you want healthy energy. You don't want a bunch of caffeine. Caffeine will kill you, right? So you get this healthy stuff. It's got all these vitamins. It's got all these different flavors. You just mix it with water and just drink it up. You get some good healthy energy and not like some crazy weird boost that's going to just give you the jitters. So that is Debbie. And once again, you'll find a link for that at neverlandpodcast.com. Okay, so now, as I mentioned, I was grinding my way, and it was a grind getting through Final Fantasy VI. Frequently, and that's one of the things with the trying to get the platinums on this, some of the things that have me do because you'd complete a bestiary. So you have to fight and defeat every creature, monster thing in the game. Things that only have a 1/16th chance of popping up and only in certain places. And so I end up circling in an area, circling an area, circling an area, trying to get it to pop up. And then I had one character that had to learn certain magic from having him used on him. And then another character that I had to have him in only a certain area do a thing where he learns from the animals that he interacts with. And I had to get a certain amount of those to get achievements for that. And it was so grindy that it took me forever to get through the game to where I almost couldn't enjoy the story anymore. But I finally did get through it. I've earned my platinum trophy on there. I'm so proud of myself for completing it. I accomplished what I wanted to do when I bought the set of the 6 Pixel Remaster games, and I got a platinum for all 6 of those games. I did it. So now, with that being the case, let's talk a little bit about this franchise in general. This is a fantasy anthology media franchise developed and published by Square Enix. It's a Japanese role-playing game, frequently called a JRPG, with varying gameplay, settings, and stories between each installment, and that it does retain some plot and gameplay elements throughout that focuses on fantasy and even some science fantasy settings. So it's not quite science fiction, it's more science fantasy, but science fiction fantasy is probably a good way to look at it, similar to like what Star Wars would be. It's a fantasy story in a science fiction environment. There's still a lot of fantasy elements that go into Final Fantasy, but occasionally you get a science fiction environment. Or a bit of a mixture. The core series is a role-playing franchise, but it has branched out into other games such as MMORPGs. That's a massive multiplayer online role-playing game. There's tactical role-playing games, there's action role-playing games, and there's even some fighting games, which I'm not sure if they ever got released in the States, but I heard they're not really that great. It's been distributed on many platforms, actually beginning with the Nintendo Entertainment System. Computers, mobile, heck, I got a mobile game right now, game streaming services, it's just branched out on all kinds of different things, including books, anime, novels, and manga. And now we don't always get all of that here in the States. I do have some books. I haven't got any of the manga and anime. I don't think we've gotten all the anime here. I did find some on YouTube that somebody had translated some anime that kind of told a little bit of the story of Zack and Cloud of Final Fantasy VII, kind of Zack taking Cloud to Midgar. It's a little bit of an anime on that. It's kind of short, but it's kind of neat. And I think they intended it to be part of a series they were going to do. So the plots tend to focus on a group of characters. They all have various backgrounds and they team up and they're trying to save their world, all while trying to deal with their own struggles. And they're fighting against a central antagonist whose goal is usually world destruction or world domination. And sometimes a combination of the two. The names, designs, and spells are often based on real world mythologies, religions, and cultures. And this has actually been the flagship franchise for Square Enix when it used to be called Squaresoft. And it's actually been their best-selling video game series with 130 million units sold, which is, you know, I'd say it's pretty impressive. Basically, you're going to get a bunch of characters that you'll form a party with, usually 4, but sometimes only 3. You form a party and you try to mix their strengths and everything and acquire new abilities and level them up and that kind of thing, almost as if you were playing, you know, on a tabletop game with some friends. The battle systems have kind of changed around a little bit. Sometimes you have like menu based. Sometimes you're kind of doing an action style. Sometimes you get a mixture of both, like the remake and rebirth of Final Fantasy VII. But there's always usually a growth system and various different equipment and accessories. And sometimes you have some repeat of weapons, like ultimate weapons, and you have a version of Excalibur will usually show up. Relics became a thing in 6, which kind of carried over into 7 to have these relic things that were going to give you certain things. Settings, of course, sometimes very traditional fantasy and sometimes very much science fantasy with a lot of plots. And the early games that really revolved around these crystals, and there would be 4 crystals representing 4 elements. And without these worlds, these crystals, the world deteriorates. And I think at some times there was even more than 4, like that have like different things. Different themes, though, would be like dualism, which is presented in many ways such as through a contrast between 2 worlds, between 2 heroes or heroines, and between a protagonist and an antagonist. And most of this dualism represents a balance that is disturbed by outside forces, forcing the protagonist to restore it. Other times, the balance set is deemed unjust by the protagonist, and they must instead end the cycle to free the world, which one of those early games did do that. And we're going to get into it specifically later. And another common theme is rebellion. The protagonists are often forced to fight a higher power, either on a quest for revenge, for freedom, or another motivation. And the higher power can range from an empire, such as the Gestalian Empire from Final Fantasy VI, a religion such as Yevon from Final Fantasy X, which I haven't played yet, or a deity such as Falci from Final Fantasy VIII, which I'm about to play. So during the journey to vanquish these powers, their threats escalate until the protagonists free the world from whatever is oppressing it. So let's get into some specifics about individual games. And of course, this all started with the original Final Fantasy, which is now frequently called Final Fantasy I. So, of course, this is published by Square, which was Squaresoft at the time, and released on the Nintendo Entertainment System, or Famicom, in Japan, December 1987. And this surprisingly ended up being the flagship. It wasn't released, though, in North America until 1990, and then it's had re-releases on the PlayStation, Game Boy Advance, PlayStation Portable, iOS, Android, other platforms, stuff like that. And the interesting thing is, because how it was released in 87, and now Nintendo of America, and I don't think this was a problem in Japan, but I know Nintendo of America was guilty of letting a publisher only publish like one game per year, because they were trying to control how many games were available on the system, which didn't make any sense. And so that's why you'd have Konami sometimes would release games under Ultra Games, because they had the license for Ninja Turtles, and you notice Ninja Turtle games were released under Ultra Games. But they would form subsidiary companies to release other games, sometimes like Tengen, I'm not sure. They would just go and say, forget it, we're not going to worry about the Nintendo licensing, and we'll just put it in our own cartridge, and they'd release the games that way and really make Nintendo mad, but, you know, we'd still buy it. They had a version of Gauntlet like that, and then you could also buy a version of Gauntlet that was a normal case, but some of you probably had some of those games that they released under the company Tengen, and then they didn't bother getting the approval from Nintendo, and they just put it in their own casing. But because of things like that, you already had, by 1990, I mean, Final Fantasy games started coming out almost yearly. There are those early on ones. So there's not a lot of difference as far as the graphics. It's just a different map, a bit more story. But the numbering kind of got off for the releases in the United States, because, of course, it takes time to localize and translate and that kind of thing. And so here in the United States, we got one, which is one. And then our version of two on the Super Nintendo was actually the fourth in the series. And then the third game we got was actually the sixth in the series, and they didn't really set things right until 7 came out on the PlayStation, which is an entirely different story. But this first game puts players in control of four characters that are the Warriors of Light, and they start. They ask the character to select the classes and names for each, and there are some definitely recommended group ups that you can find online if you've ever going to play this. In fact, if you got the NES Classic, you can play the original game. But I did try to follow some instructions of some recommended ones, although I've seen other recommendations doing different things. It's kind of up to you of what you want to do and how your play style you want to go. So the Warriors of Light, they traverse maps, they have dungeons and towns, very much like a Legend of Zelda game, only with a different combat system. They're all connected by a world map. You have random encounters, which I used to really have problems with. I didn't like random encounters, but I've kind of gotten used to it, I guess, through the course of that. There's, of course, boss battles and stuff like that. This is a fantasy medieval setting. There's three major continents, and the four Warriors of Light begin in Cornelia, and they're asked by the King of Cornelia to rescue Princess Sarah from Garland. And after defeating him, the king opens up a bridge, enabling them to pass into the town of Provoca. This sets off on an adventure to defeat the four fiends and rescue the world. So this all comes, there's a bit of a message that'll come up on screen where you have some of the original Nobuo Uematsu. He's composed the music for most of the games in the series, but he has what became the main theme of the series will play, and you have this text on screen that says, "And so their journey began. The four Warriors of Light felt overwhelmed by the great task destiny had placed upon them. They did not know the true significance of the four crystals they held in their hands. The crystal that once, long ago, shone with a light so brilliant. The time for their journey had come. The time to cast off the veil of darkness and bring the world once more into the light." There's usually a lot of themes of light and darkness going on. Like there's even one of the games, and we'll get into it later, where there's a balance of light and darkness that's been thrown off, and it has to be reset every once in a while. So now this, going back here, four centuries before the events of this, the Lufinian people had used the Wind Crystal's power to build a giant flying fortress and airships. The Wind Crystal eventually lost its light, which drove the Lufinians' homeland into decline. Tiamat, the Fiend of Wind, attacked the Lufinians and took over their flying fortress along with the Mirage Tower. And in response, the Lufinian Cid, and there's always a Cid in every game, there's a Cid. Well, he hit an airship in the southern continent. So 2 centuries after Tiamat, the Fiend of Water Kraken sunk the center of an oceanic civilization to make his personal lair and darken the water crystal. So basically, like, all the crystals have been corrupted over time. And to kind of get, without telling you everything, but you, Garland, who you thought you've defeated, is back. The Warriors of Light learned that the four fiends were created when Garland's hatred merged with the four elements of nature when the Warriors of Light defeated Garland in their time. The fiends used the crystal's light to send him 2,000 years back, while Garland sent the fiends from the past to the future. And in doing so, Garland created a time loop, allowing him to live forever. So Garland transforms into chaos and is defeated for good, breaking the time loop and sending the Warriors of Light back to the present. The world is restored, but the warrior's journey has been forgotten outside of legends. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is you defeat Garland at the beginning of the game, but then when you come back around full circle, after these fiends have come along into your current time, you find out that Garland has created this weird time loop where he's got thrown into the past 2,000 years, and he took the fiends from 2,000 years ago and sent them into your time. So as I was saying, as I was going over these notes, so is everybody confused? Are we keeping up? But so, yeah, all the crystals are getting corrupted, and you as the Warriors of Light will have to go and solve that. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like when you first play it that the plot's going to get that complicated. But then when you get to the end, you realize, whoa, this was deep. So eventually, though, you do get Final Fantasy 2. Now, this is the original 2. This is second in the series. This is not 2 as we got here in the States, right? So this was released December 17th in 1988 in Japan. And this game centers on a conflict by the Polynesian Empire, whose emperor, Mateus, is using Hellspawn to try to conquer the world. The protagonist, Furion, along with his allies Maria and Guy, joined the Wild Rose Rebellion to fight them and meet many allies along the way to try and stop the emperor and save the world. Now, in 2, there wasn't a leveling system from the previous game, and you have your playable characters have individual stats which increase according to how much they are used or required. For example, a character who frequently casts magic would have their magic proficiency increase faster, while a character who frequently takes damage would have their maximum health points increase. Battles are fought in the same traditional turn-based style as the first installment, but the expanded combat options for both players and enemy characters. So they tried to do something really, really different with this one. I can't say that I was a big fan of it. I guess different. They didn't want to make it to where it was the same thing. So you do have quite a few characters that pop up in here. So, of course, you have Furion. And he's the main character. He's an adopted friend of Maria and Leon and a childhood friend of Guy. And he seeks to destroy the Empire to avenge his fallen family. Maria is Furion and Guy's childhood friend and the lead heroine. She quests to find her brother Leon, who, during the Four's escape from Finn. Guy is a friend of Furion and Maria, who was raised by wild animals before being taken in by Maria and Leon's parents. While his grasp of human language is limited, Guy has the ability to speak with wild animals. And of course, you know Leon. There's Minwu, a white maze, Joseph, Gordon, Leela, lots of different characters. So there's also Princess Hilda. Now, this is the princess of Finn and the commander of the Wild Rose Rebellion. She and Scott share mutual affection for each other. And while Hilda never joins the hero's party, she provides them with crucial guidance and direction over the course of the story. Now, Scott is a prince of Kashuun and the elder brother of Gordon. He and Princess Hilda, of course, have that affection. Now, they meet Scott. The heroes will meet Scott and Finn, where he entrusts them with his ring. Scott does not join the hero's party during the main game, but is a playable character during the Soul of Rebirth campaign and later releases, which I have not seen that in the Pixel Remaster in there. If memory serves, I don't think both Scott and Hilda survive the entire thing, but I think you give the ring to Princess Hilda after I think Scott passes away. A lot of different things going on. I don't want to tell you the entire story, but with the war's end, the monsters called from hell vanish. The world returns to peace, eventually to forget the bitter memories, save for the efforts of the young heroes who saved them all. A lot of different stuff. And this, I think, is the first time you really start seeing characters die, which has become a recurring theme in Final Fantasy game that, you know, there's high chance that some characters are going to die that you meet across. And occasionally a playable character will even be killed. So it's become a thing.
Our Are you a fan of Adventures in Odyssey, Lamplighter Theater, or Jonathan Park? Want to join other fans for discussions or behind-the-scenes info about these shows? Or maybe you're looking for more great audio drama to listen to with your family. Do you enjoy hearing exclusive interviews with the cast and crew of your favorite shows? Then Audio Theater Central is the podcast for you. I'm J.D. Sutter. Since 2010, Audio Theater Central has been exploring the family-friendly audio drama world through news, reviews, and interviews. Join me and a rotating cast of co-hosts each month for another episode featuring the latest updates, in-depth reviews of new releases, and conversations with the actors, writers, directors, sound designers, and composers who create your favorite audio dramas. And maybe we'll introduce you to some great shows you've never heard of before. Find us at audiotheatercentral.com or in your favorite podcast app. That's audiotheatercentral.com.
And now back to He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
All right, so the third installment, published April 27th in 1990, this story revolves around four Warriors of Light who begin as Onion Knights in the original release, although they were named Lunith, Ark, Riphia, and Ingus in the 3D remake. When they find the Wind Crystal, it grants them its power and instructs them to restore balance to the world. And this is where you have a job system, and there's like 23 jobs. When you find crystals and you complete side quests, you get all these jobs. There was an achievement for getting all the jobs and maximizing levels on them. But you get all these different jobs, and you can assign whatever job, and they'll be like the standard things, like a thief, a monk, the jobs can evolve and become like a monk could become a ninja or something like that. You know, there's lots of different developments. They, you know, each time around they are trying to do, so it's not the same game. They do a lot of different styles of gameplay and to try to mix it up to where it's not, you know, being repetitive. So this one is centuries ago, the ancients used the crystals of light to build an advanced civilization and triggered a cataclysmic flood of light. Four warriors of darkness were selected to restore the balance, and the ancient civilization fell to ruin. The Golgans predicted that history would repeat and that four warriors of light would be appointed to stop a flood of darkness. And that's where the point where you're at now, like the darkness is overtaken and you have to restore balance by bringing the light back. So this is what I was talking about earlier, where there's like this balance of light and darkness, because darkness is not always necessarily evil, but when it becomes evil and it becomes dominant, that's when it becomes a problem. So the party confronts Zand, who declares he has eternal life, and they attack him. On his defeat, the cloud of darkness appears and absorbs his body, revealing that it had been manipulating Zand's actions to reduce the world to nothingness. The cloud of darkness kills the warriors of light, but Doga and Yune sacrifice their souls to revive them. The party enters the world of darkness, defeats the evil guardians of the dark crystals, which frees the ancient warriors of darkness. When they face the cloud of darkness again, the four warriors of the dark sacrifice themselves to weaken the entity. The cloud of darkness is defeated, and the heroes and the allies return to their homes. The old man returns to Amor, Alice returns to his kingdom, and Cid and Desh return home to their lovers. Sarah does not want to leave Ingus and stays with him. Each of the heroes goes their separate ways, with Ingus and Sarah returning to Castle Sasuni, Riphia taking up blacksmithing in Kazus, Lunith and Ark returning to Ur. In the Famicom version, the Warriors of Light return to Ur together. So, I mean, yeah, it all wraps up, but it's a big, complicated thing with basically trying to bring light back to the crystals, and you have to fight the guardians of the dark crystals, and yeah, I don't want to give away too much, but there it is. There's a lot to it. The plots have a lot more, and there's a lot more character development and characterization that goes on. And as the series has progressed and they were able to do more and more, there's been even more characterization. It gets any more. But July 19th, 1991 saw the release of Final Fantasy IV, and this is on the Super Nintendo, which I think was still on the regular NES. So this is a Super Nintendo. This came to the US as Final Fantasy II. This is the first one that I ever played. Now, this takes place as a medieval fantasy setting, but there's, of course, always airships. And this focuses on Cecil Harvey. He's the captain of the Red Wings of Baron. And after performing a raid on Mysidia to steal the Water Crystal, Cecil and the Knights start to question their orders as their king, as they believe stealing from the Mysidians was wrong, and they end up killing people. And they're like, why did we end up having to kill these people? As punishment for disloyalty, the king strips Cecil of his title and orders him and Cain Highwind to win back his trust by sending him to the village of Mist. This sets Cecil off on an adventure in which he and many other allies he meets must uncover the truth and save the world from monsters. This is also where we got the beginning of the Active Time battle system. This is also where the Prelude, which many people might know as kind of a chromatic scale on a harp, starts getting a counter melody in the theme, which has been a continuation thing. So this will be the first one. And Cecil's got, he goes from being a black knight to becoming like a white knight or like a paladin as he becomes a whole new character. And he has to leave his beloved behind in the city of Baron and has to go back for her. And it's a really great thing. But unlike the original Final Fantasy, almost no time is needed to level grind to advance to the next area. As long as the party does not escape from the majority of random encounters, another new addition is save points, which became a staple feature. This was a great game. I really enjoyed it. It's probably one of the better stories of the series. That, and I really liked the story of 6. And of course, I'm a fan of 7, as you know. But this, I mean, this has a lot of different characters. If I remember correctly, so Rosa is Cecil's beloved, and Cain Hywin is the commander of the Baron Dragoons, and Cecil and Rosa's childhood friend. He has a rivalry with Cecil and unrequited feelings for Rosa, and he kind of gets corrupted by those feelings by the evil king who's doing this. He kind of messes with him to where you end up fighting this villain that turns out to be Cain. It's a lot of really good stuff, and eventually go to the moon, this red moon, and have a whole new world to explore. And I think when I was playing it initially, I had borrowed it from like Philip's sister's boyfriend at the time. He said, oh, you got to play this. This is great and everything. And I had done so much on the map and so much grinding around. And then by the time I got to the moon, I was like, oh, no, a whole new map. And I got to deal with that. And so I didn't finish past that point, which is a good thing because, you know, she wasn't dating that guy forever. So I got his games back to him before I never saw him again. But it was nice with the Pixel Remasters to get a chance to play this one again. But I like a good redemption story, and this one had a really good redemption story, and you suddenly realize, hey, are we the bad guys? So now we move into 5. Now, of course, this was not released in the States. It was another Super Nintendo game. Overall, like, the graphic style hasn't changed a whole lot from the NES, though, as we moved into the Super Nintendo until we get to 6. And then 6 really... they figured out what they could really do with the Super Nintendo, and the size of the characters is different. The animations on the characters, it's different. It really got better. But so this is 1992, December 6th being released in Japan. It's still another medieval fantasy setting, and it centers on a group of 4 strangers brought together by circumstances to save the crystals that have mysteriously began shattering. The one behind the phenomena is the antagonist, X-Death, and as part of a plan to release himself from imprisonment and gain the power of the Void, a realm of nothingness, which could bestow absolute power on one able to resist being absorbed by it. The 4 warriors become the Warriors of Light and turn their attentions to defeating X-Death and stopping the Void's energies from consuming the world. And this has another job system. There's 22 jobs. Battles are fought in an active time battle. Okay, so this one you have Bartz Clouser, known as Butts in the original Japanese. He's an adventurer who becomes embroiled in the adventure when he comes upon a crash site of a meteorite with Boko, his chocobo, and meets Lena. And you got Lena, the Charlotte Tycoon. She's Reina in the English PlayStation version. She meets Bartz at the meteorite. She's the daughter of King Tycoon, and when the king failed to return from his trip, Lena set out to look for him. Now, the king went off on a trip with a... not quite a dragon, but basically like a dragon. I forgot what the name they gave for this creature, but it's a wyvern, I think. But he never came back. And then you got Galoof. This is a mysterious old man with amnesia that you discover him unconscious in the meteorite crash site, and he remembers only 2 things. He knows his name and knows he's headed for the Wind Shrine. And you got Farish Schwartz, who's a pirate captain who the party meets when they try to sneak aboard the pirate ship. And then Krill Mayor Baldizian is Galoof's granddaughter who aids the party several times and eventually joins the party when Galoof does pass away, heroically, I will add. Now, Ferris, bit of a spoiler warning, Ferris is actually Lena or Reina's sister who is lost and has been pretending to be a man as a pirate, and she's actually really strong and everything, but there's some really funny moments where Bartz and Galoof come across her and they're checking on her while she's asleep, and they're kind of like, wow, he's a pretty man, and then they find out, oh no, you're a woman the whole time. There's also a sea creature that's friends with I believe with Ferris, that she's made a friend. But yeah, the characters are very, very interesting. I really enjoyed 5 as well. It took me a long time to get through five, if you might recall, listening to the podcast, me talking about and going through it. But all these different crystals, this line has a lot more than four crystals. They're all being broken, and you're trying to save them, but you're not succeeding. The crystals came from this other world, and these meteors are people coming from this other world into the world you're playing at, and Galoof turns out to be one of them. Yeah, but they were coming to try to save the crystals, but every time a crystal breaks, you get new jobs. And of course, I had to get a certain level of all these different jobs, and yeah, it was a really, really fun game, and I definitely recommend playing it. This is available on a lot of different places. All right, so now let's... I'm trying to just move the show right along, so let's talk about 6, the one that I just finished. This has probably the biggest cast of playable characters I swear I've ever seen, and they try to even give backstory and motivation for why everybody's doing what they're doing to every character. Not every character, though, I've felt like a main character or a main supporting character, but they were around enough, and they were rounded out and fleshed out enough to where they had a lot of stuff going on. Now, this originally was released April 2nd, 1994, and this being, 6 was actually released as 3 here in the States on the Super Nintendo originally, and this is the one that, like I mentioned before, they really figured out what they could do with the Super Nintendo, and the graphics are amazing on this. This magic has apparently gone out of the world when you get into this one. You have a really nice intro to this game when you start it up. And you've got sort of the steampunk vibe going that you're going to see come around in 7, where you have a lot of technology and weaponry that's more technology based. And you have some like gun style weaponry. But yeah, so basically this focuses on a conflict where the Gestalian Empire has been conquering the world and a rebel faction opposed to them known as the Returners. And it's a very fantasy steampunk style, like I mentioned. Now, the Empire has acquired a lot of great power, and they've been experimenting on captured espers. And these are magical creatures of legend. Now, long ago, there had been this war of the Magi, where magic was being exploited. And so the espers, who were the kind of the magical creatures, their magic was being taken from the espers, they left into their own world. Now, the espers, turns out those are what we know in previous games as summons, where you would summon something that would have a thing like Ifrit and Odin and Shiva, all these different ones that would have like a different element or different abilities when you would summon them. And so the espers are those summons in this game, and they've been slowly dying out. They become Magisite crystals, which gives you the ability to learn magic from them. But you meet the first character, Terra, and the first one you play, and she's being mind controlled, and it turns out she's half human, half esper. And she's got magical abilities, which is why the Empire has got mental control over her. But they lose their mental control, and she breaks free and slowly starts to learn who she is again. Meeting a lot of different characters, you have Celis, who was a general from the Empire and has turned on the Empire. You have Locke. Locke had a really great backstory, I think. And of course, Locke, he can pick locks. They call him a thief, but he says, "No, I am a treasure hunter." He became a treasure hunter because he's looking for an item to restore the love of his life from his younger days, childhood, where she fell ill and died. And he found out about this object he could get that could restore her. Now, a bit of a spoiler warning. He kind of falls in love with Celeste, and they're kind of very sweet on each other. It's very cute. But he finds the item to bring his old girlfriend back to life. And she says, "Why? You didn't need to bring me back. I know about you and Celeste. I'm happy for you. I want you two to be together. You love me enough in the short life that I have. I'm only going to be here for a day, but thank you for wanting to see me one more time. But I'm going now. Go live your life." It was this really nice little story, and I really enjoyed it. But a lot of characters have really great backgrounds and stuff. My wife really, she spotted Mog the Moogle. Now, if you're not familiar with Moogles and Chocobos, who's looking up on the Moogle is kind of like a teddy bear koala crossover with a weird thing sticking out of his head and bat wings. And then a Chocobo is like a giant yellow bird that you can ride on instead of a horse. This also introduced party swapping. You also have the brothers Edgar and Sabin, or Sabin, I'm not sure. But one of them, they had to take over the kingdom, basically, after their parents died. And Sabin became a monk and a warrior. And he's the guy that's famously will suplex a train in this one, because he gets a suplex maneuver you can do. And at one point, you're having to fight this dream train thing that carries people off to their fate when they die. And you have to stop this train to get somebody off of it. And you can literally suplex the train when you're fighting it. This one had a really nice system of having people having different abilities that didn't necessarily cost magic to use, like all of the monk abilities, and Edgar has all these different tools, it says, on these different kind of weapons. You could do these different things. They wouldn't cost you any magic. That was really kind of handy. The only character I think mostly everybody survives this one, which was kind of a rare thing anymore for Final Fantasy. Although Shadow, who's this kind of ninja mercenary, he didn't rejoin the group. He stayed behind on when the final things are falling apart. I think I could have gotten a different ending with if you have him have enough dream sequences. And I did 4 dream sequences, and the 5th one I thought was supposed to happen somewhere in the final castle. I don't know what I didn't do, but it wasn't worth an achievement or anything. But apparently you can get some different outcomes for different characters on who's going to live and die. And for the most part, everybody will live, and lots of different characters on there. Let's see. I think there was something significant. I think I've mentioned enough on the main characters, but your main villain here is Kefka, who's this weird jester joker looking guy nobody knows why the emperor keeps him around, but eventually he kills the emperor, takes over the entire empire, and puts these triad things together to basically steal all the magic of the world into himself, and basically causes the world to fall into ruin. And I think you lose like a year of time before you come back, and then you have to rejoin all the heroes together and then go try to defeat Kefka's power. This is also the first time we have a Colosseum, which we're going to see in later Final Fantasy games, where you have like a tournament thing. Although the weird thing about the Colosseum is this one is you select what one of your characters you're putting in the Colosseum, but then you don't have any control over the battle. They go fight. You just have to sit there and hope they win. But sometimes that's the only way to fight certain creatures to get the bestiary. So I have had that problem, but yeah, I really enjoyed the story of 6. I felt like I got distracted from the story from having to go and do all the grinding and stuff that I had to do in order to get to it. And I did also enjoy there's an opera at one point that happens that with the Pixel Remaster, they've got some Italian opera in there, which I think we talked about when we were talking about music from a game, or at least I did some research on it. I don't know if we really brought it up necessarily a couple episodes ago, or was it last episode? Heather and I was talking game music with lyrics, but there's actual lyrics to things on screen and a story that plays out in an opera. And this reminded me a lot of Loveless that we see coming up in Final Fantasy VII, which now this was a big deal. This was like an event. And some of the development on this. Now, Nintendo was working with Sony to create a CD-ROM system, sort of like Sega had a CD-ROM system that could attach to the Genesis. And so they were going to be a CD-ROM, maybe to attach to the Super Nintendo, or maybe be their next game system. Eventually, Sony and Nintendo parted ways, and Sony created the PlayStation, while Nintendo created the Nintendo 64. Now, Square realized that they to do everything they wanted with 7, they needed a CD-ROM. So they parted ways, and instead of doing exclusive things with Nintendo, they started working exclusively with Sony. They were able to do full cutscenes, and they really sold Final Fantasy VII in ads as being the most cinematic thing you'll see isn't going to be in theaters. It's going to be this game. And it really did have a lot of cutscenes and stuff like that. And I think it was a step forward for storytelling, because, I mean, we'd have stuff before like Metal Gear Solid and Resident Evil that would tell some story, but it didn't do it as a separate cutscene. It kind of did it with in-game characters for the most part and had them all where they're at. But this one, they had like pre-rendered full cutscenes that were mind-blowing at the time. Now, I purchased it when it first came out. I wish I still had that original copy, because I bet it's worth a lot of money. But I've recently purchased a Greatest Hits edition, because I wanted to have the original one to play. I can play it on the PlayStation 3, and I wanted to have Heather get a chance to play it. But I also have the remastered where you can, you know, turn off the encounters. You can do all kinds of different stuff on that one, which is the same as the PZ version. So that's the first one that I actually beat, because I didn't finish it back in 1997, because I really liked the character of Aerith, who has now become my favorite video game character of all time. But a gaming magazine kind of spoiled that something was going to happen. And I won't say it, just in case you don't know, I'd like for you to experience it yourself. So Final Fantasy VII follows the story of the mercenary Cloud Strife, who is hired by the eco-terrorist group Avalanche, led by Barrett Wallace, to help fight the megacorporation Shinra Electric Power Company, who attempts to drain the planet's lifeblood as an energy source to further their profits. Apathetic to the cause, Cloud initially fights for personal gain and for the promise he made to childhood friend Tifa Lockhart. Cloud eventually joins forces with many others to save the planet, which is threatened by Shinra and Cloud's nemesis, Sephiroth, and discovers a reason to fight for a cause other than his own. Now, this has, of course, an active time battle system, which is becoming kind of common. This is the first time I had ever worked with an active time battle thing where you have a timer, but it also gave you a limit gauge that as you take damage, your limit gauge would fill, and you do like this ultimate effect, and you could get like different limit moves, limit attacks or whatever. And what's cool about Aerith, and one of the things that makes her special, is normally a limit break. That's the word I was looking for. A limit break is something doing damage to your enemies. Aerith's first thing to do is to heal her ally. So when she gets mad, she doesn't strike back, because really it's supposed to be reaching your limit of like, that's it, I can't take no more, I'm going to break. And she heals her allies or protects her allies when she gets upset. That speaks volumes. That is something to think about. You've also got a lot of status effects that happen in this one. That's kind of a rolling thing, but this, of course, as we mentioned before, Aerith Gainsborough, flower girl from the Sector 5 slums. She befriends Cloud. Now, Cloud's resemblance to someone she used to know mystifies Aerith, and she joins him and Avalanche on her quest to discover more about her own heritage as an ancient. And being an ancient is kind of a recurring theme in the first six games, too. Well, not all six games have ancients, but there's usually some sort of ancient in some fashion. They're like, sometimes it's espers, which are actually summons, but they're like this ancient race of magic or whatever. But there's usually something you'll find, well, this ancients and or some other beings that are a part of this, you know. And she is like the last of her kind. You also get to meet Red 13 and find out his real name is Nanaki later. You got Kate Sith, a robotic cat who's on top of a big stuffed Mog, and then Cid Hywin, because there's always a Cid. You also got some optional characters of Yuffie Kisaragi and Vincent Valentine. Now, this has got a heck of a lot of story going on, and of course, now we've got a remake trilogy in the works. And it's still going, and I got pulled back in and into the Final Fantasy franchise by remake, and that's how I got through COVID, by playing that game and just absolutely loving it, and it got me wanting to go and play the original 7 again, which I did, and again, you know, go through the entire story, which got me interested in, like, you know, maybe I should play the other ones, maybe I give them a fair chance, because I got to where I'm more patient about random encounters as I've gotten older. But I really have enjoyed 7. It probably is my favorite. But, you know, since then, I haven't finished any of the storylines in 14. 14 is a massive online role-playing game, and I haven't finished any main stories yet. I have also, though, played 15 and 16 and completed those and did enjoy those. So I have a gap of what I have not played yet, and I do intend to play all the ones that are available to me. Although I think 11 is an online one, so I won't be doing that one. But I'll try to play 12 and 13. I think they are available for me to purchase digitally. So that's why I own a lot of these other ones, is digitally. That's how I'm going to play 8, 9, and 10, and 10-2. I think 12 has a sequel game as well. I'm kind of hoping when they finish the remake trilogy, we're getting like a sequel game to Final Fantasy VII. Because we did get a prequel, Crisis Core, which they did re-release and remaster it. So I play out and play that. That is Zack's story. Zack is Aerith's boyfriend that he disappeared. And Cloud kind of imprinted on Zack. I don't want to get into the details if you're not familiar. It's a whole different thing. But that's why she meets Cloud and sees a lot of Zack in him. So she's curious of what's going on. And there's a bit of an attraction, but she realizes it's an attraction to the Zack that's in Cloud and not Cloud himself. And she does want to find out and discover who Cloud really is, because she's like, you're not really yourself. You're kind of somebody else right now. And so she talks about trying to find Cloud's true self and wanting to know him. But a lot of different kind of things going on with this game. It is a great one, and that's actually where we're going to wrap up this deep dive into the first 7 Final Fantasy games. And the music is fantastic by Nobuo Uematsu. I've really enjoyed it, and with the Pixel Remasters, I've found a lot of it on Apple Music, so I could listen to those, and I've been purchasing the remake and Rebirth soundtracks. I got the full ones, at least digitally. I kind of want to order the physical copies of the discs, which I have to get through Square Enix. Trying to collect things from Square Enix, you have to kind of get them direct, if not through Amazon or eBay. And you're going to pay out the nose. Like all these Aerith figures I have here on my desk, I paid out the nose for these things. But they're worth it to have. I really enjoy it. Basically, the critics really approve of these, and if you talk to fans of the series, that each one, you know, kind of has their different variants of favorites, and maybe certain ones that maybe they don't like as much as the others, but they're all pretty good games. And of course, the best selling one still is 7. And especially now that you got like different versions of 7, it's still their top seller. Will anything ever of their franchise beat it? I don't know. But I hope you enjoyed this rundown of the Final Fantasy franchise. Thanks for coming along with me on that. Let's start wrapping this up here by reminding you about Pod Engagement, which you can find out about at NeverlandPodcast.com. That's Daniel J. Lewis's company. If you happen to have a podcast and you need all the tools to really succeed, it's at Pod Engagement. There you can find a link right, of course, at NeverlandPodcast.com. If you use the link and go and subscribe onto his program, I get a little bit of a cutback and does kind of help. And I do appreciate anyone who does that. Of course, you can go to Patreon and you can support the show there. You can also at Red Circle there. If you look in your show notes, you'll find how to become an exclusive member at Red Circle for your feed. And then you get to get rid of all those ads that I stick into the program other than the ones that I read aloud. Don't forget, you can email us podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. We're on X at Neverland PCast. We're on Facebook with both a group and a fan page. Now, in the group right now, I have a poll that I'd love for you to participate in and maybe add something to, where I'm picking you some of the best game scores, right? Not how many points you scored, but like the music. This is the non-lyric side of things. Do you have a particular piece of music that you really enjoy from a game? I want you to share it with us. Come and vote for yours. If I haven't listed it on there, go do it. But it's in our group. Come and join the group and participate. We, of course, do want to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhite of the Wilhite and Wall Show for helping me out with the show's introduction. Like I said, we do have a Patreon under Neverland Podcast. Please go in there and help us out to keep this thing going. No copyright infringement is intended, and copyright is held by the respective owners. Content is shared for review and commentary purposes under fair use license. And now, get lost in an adventure, and we'll see you next time.